call the meeting of the House Environment Finance Division to order. Quorum is not quite present, although we're getting close. And I do want to note there are a couple of members who are excused because of the weather, and their children are at home from school. So we want to make sure. And if any committee members feel that need, we can, or staff, we can excuse you. I think we want to make anybody do something that is unsafe. So, Mr. Erdman, I think we had some technical difficulties. We have an awesome video that we're not going to be able to see. Is that
awesome? It's but you're not going to see it.
So, Mr. Strohmeyer, we'll try to load that onto the site at some point so people can see that it's awesome.
All right.
And I think we now have a quorum. Oh, okay. Mr. Erdman, why don't you proceed?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Edman. I'm the Director of Explorer Minnesota Tourism. I appreciate your being here today and giving me this opportunity to give you a brief overview of Explorer Minnesota. And I'll go through some of these slides rather quickly. I think you should have a complete copy of the deck in front of you, but if you have any questions at any point or after, please let me know. So very briefly, Explorer Minnesota, as an agency, our mission is simple: to inspire people to travel, to inspire consumers, and to facilitate their travel to and within the state of Minnesota. We're a relatively small non-cabinet agency, approximately 46.5 employees, offices throughout the state. We man state welcome centers, and we're guided by a tourism council, which is a 28-person tourism council representing all aspects of our industry. They help guide us in our various programs. This slide here basically shows the organizational structure. We're basically organized into three basic structures: brand strategy, which is our communications, PR, social efforts, our industry or partner relations, which is the offices all throughout the state of Minnesota, as well as our international and group efforts, and then our operations unit, which is our fiscal, as well as our IT and our welcome centers. We have basically five strategic imperatives, as we call them, or goals that we try to focus on in all the things that we do: to drive sustainable economic growth in the state, to create innovative marketing and brand awareness, to reach consumers and engage them in interest in travel, to provide service, and to collaborate with our industry. Under each of those goals, we have very specific numeric goals that we try to achieve, such as growing the leisure and hospitality industry to a $17.2 billion industry, growing jobs, growing sales and tax revenue for the state of Minnesota. In our advertising, we try to achieve a return on investment of at least 7 to 1 based on outside evaluations of our efforts, basically trying to show, did people actually travel to the state as a result of the things that we do to market them to Minnesota. We reach about 4.5 million consumers through our website, through social, about 250,000 users. And we also try to engage with consumers through media impressions. Provide service to consumers about 3.2 million annually. These are through our welcome centers, our contact centers. And we also try to achieve a positive satisfaction that we're providing the services that consumers are looking for. And then the last item that we have in terms of goals is to enhance collaboration with our stakeholders. And we do partnerships with our industry. We have to generate money from the private sector as well, cash and in kind. And we try to achieve at least $5 million annually in terms of the match to the state. And I'll show you how we fared last year. So our base budget for Explore Minnesota is in fiscal 18 was $13.6 million. We received a slight salary adjustment for the fiscal year 19. We also receive an enhancement funding, an incentive funding. We have to bring money in from the private sector, and if we do that, we get this extra $500,000 if we hit our match $6 from the private sector as for every extra dollar from the general fund, up to a cap of $500,000. We also had in our budget an events grant program of $900,000. It's not part of our base, but that was to help support events in this last biennium. We also received a $500,000 enhancement for website technology as well, and I'll show you what we did with that as well. This slide here kind of shows the history of our budget over the last several bienniums. You'll see here that we've been relatively flat the last three bienniums, but we did receive a pretty significant increase in fiscal year 12-13, but there have been slight adjustments since that. To kind of look at where we are with our competitors, that's what this slide does. And this is the people that we primarily compete with, the Illinois, Michigans, Wisconsins, et cetera. Minnesota is that blue bar in the bottom, which basically we are being outspent by some of our primary competitors. A lot of those states have different funding mechanisms, things like car rental tax or gaming revenue. We depend on general fund. We have to make our case to you every year that we're using our dollars effectively. But we just have a different structure here in Minnesota compared to our other states, competitive states. And I just got this slide from the U.S. Travel Association. It shows the tourism budgets throughout the country and where does kind of Minnesota stack up. And probably a couple of things to pick up on this is that the average budget, now there's highs and lows, but the average is about $18.6 million a year. You'll see that 28 states last fiscal year saw an increase. 13 states saw a decrease, and about six, I think, remained the same. So there has been up and downs in various years. We're just around about average, a little bit below average, actually, if you compare to a lot of the states in the country. But again, it's hard to caution you about using those averages because you have some big states like California and you're comparing it to Iowa, et cetera. But the average is about 18.6 million. Our industry has seen growth over the years to the $15.3 billion that we are right now. Sales tax revenue, as I mentioned earlier, is about $1 billion. It's been seeing steady growth over the last several years. And the jobs, and these are just the jobs that are directly related to the leisure and hospitality industry, there are about 270,000 leisure and hospitality jobs in Minnesota. We also do these surveys at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, asking how is their business? Is it doing well? Is it not doing well? We ask hotels, resorts, attractions throughout the state how they're doing. We measure things like occupancy, revenue in hotels, et cetera. But this slide I thought was kind of interesting because it does show that probably a little over 80% of the respondents indicated last year, this was done last fall, showed that their businesses were stable, positive, or growing. So that's actually a pretty good indication that the industry feels well, pretty good about how they're doing in the tourism industry in Minnesota. In terms of our specific marketing, we market to obviously Minnesotans, but also the surrounding states. Winnipeg and parts of Thunder Bay as well. Our growth markets are Chicago, Kansas City, and Denver. And we actually went to some of those growth markets when we received the bump in our budget three bienniums ago that we tried to expand beyond just the border states. We use a lot of different media in terms of reaching consumers. You can't just be involved in one medium versus the other. It's broadcast, it's outdoor, digital, et cetera. And a lot, we're doing actually less and less television than we have ever done before, and we're repurposing a lot of the video that we create and using it in a variety of digital formats as well where consumers are going to get their information. We do national as well as regional print. Print still important. People still like to have those publications and brochures, and so we're focused on those publications where people are going that are interested in traveling to Minnesota. We do out-of-home talking this last year about things that are going on in the state, whether it's in golfing or at events and festivals, fishing, et cetera. And then we also do television as well. Actually, I think this is one. This is not the super awesome video, Mr. Chairman, that I wanted to show you, but this is a one video that I'm pretty sure does work. I'd be happy. Yes.
It's in the air, on the breeze, in the hush and the roar. There's something happening here. Don't miss a second. Only in Minnesota.
This is was a spot, one of several that we had did last year. We have a whole new campaign coming out in the spring, summer of 2019. And I also wanted to add this slide in here because I think it's really important as we're marketing the state to truly embrace diversity in what we do. Whether it's LGBTQ, Native American, travelers with disabilities, ethnic groups, it's important that we have not only those imagery in our marketing and in our tactics, but also producing ads in different languages, whether it be Somalian languages, Hmong languages, to make people truly feel welcome here for us to become a global destination. You'll see a lot more of that coming up in 2019 as well. Media last year was huge, an increase of about 4 billion impressions over the previous year. And part of that, of course, was due to the Super Bowl, which gave Minnesota a lot of coverage that we wouldn't have otherwise received, which allows us to talk about Minnesota in new and unique ways. Website visits, 4.9 million visits last year. It's interesting to note that 71% of those visitors to our website are new visitors. And we're also seeing a real growth of people coming to exploreminnesota.com on smartphones or tablets. And so that's one of the first times we've seen it. Actually, over half of our users are not getting into our website through traditional means. Social is incredibly important. We've put staff on specifically to focus on social because it's not as important as the advertising that I do. And, you know, you, whether it's your friends or relatives coming to the state, they tell their friends and relatives about their experience. That's even more valuable itself than any kind of advertising. Instagram was one of the bigger areas of growth there.
Mr. Edmonds, so we've got a question from Representative Sundin.
Well, surprising, I was waiting to you mentioned the money that and the return on the money that is invested and then returned in, is it 7-to-1, I think, is the ratio you spoke about?
That's what we were trying to achieve. That was the goal.
I think it was 8-to-1 before, I believe, Mr. Chair. I don't know. But my concern,
you might Representative, I will have some results for you later on, and you'll be pleased to hear.
Excellent, excellent. My concern is, and I don't mind investing in tourism. You know, I was involved in the hospitality industry when I was growing up on Lake Cabotogama there. But I fully realize that a lot of the hospitality jobs are low or minimum wage type jobs. And I just have a concern about the state of Minnesota subsidizing low-wage industry. So just a comment. Thank you.
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chair, Representative, and actually I know this is just a comment, but I would like to address that in the sense that, yes, you are right, that a lot of the jobs in the leisure and hospitality industry are not being paid as a job, as a manufacturing job. But what we found is that jobs in the leisure and hospitality industry give people employment where they might not otherwise be having a job. People that don't want full-time jobs, that people want part-time employment. And it also gives you a stepping stool to learn about business and to learn about service that could create a job that later on is a much better job. Yes, we do recognize that by itself those are not at the salary level at others, but they provide a very important need for employment for people that that need employment in the state and that can grow on to bigger and better things. So. My response to that.
And I think Representative Sundin was tasked with the job of reviewing the minutes and
Mr. Chair, I'd love to move the minutes of that date, 24th.
19.
To the minutes, Representative Heinzman?
Go ahead with the minutes. I just wanted to be on the list.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion adopted. Good job, Representative Sundin. Representative Heinzman and then Representative Sandell.
And this was more to Representative Sundin's comment. I have a big portion of those leisure and hospitality jobs in my district. And number one, of course, those are very important to Crow Wing County. But number two, I don't know how many dozens and dozens and dozens of folks that I have come across and visited with over the course of the last 4 years that go out of their way to mow a golf course so that they can later on go and play.
There you go.
So a lot of folks that come to the area appreciate that opportunity, and it gives them something that they can do, and then it allows them to access some of those activities.
Mr. Edmund, you want to jump in, or should we move to the next? There were two or three questions we had. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions as well for Mr. Heisman and Mr. Sundin. When you talk about the 270,000 hospitality jobs, are those full-time equivalent jobs?
A lot of Mr. those, Redmond. Mr. Chairman, Representative, a lot of those are part-time jobs.
What percentage of those might be in the gaming industry?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I can look that up for you.
And Mr. Chair, and members, what about public as opposed to private employment here? I used to work for the Minnesota Historical Society, and I know that as a public institution, we employed lots of people in the recreation, hospitality, and tourist industry. What percentage of these are public jobs, and what are private sector jobs?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would hazard to make a guess on that. The majority of them, I believe, are in the private sector, but some of them are also public sector jobs. Mm-hmm. They're classified under leisure and hospitality.
And Mr. Chair, the next slide, representing the growing and the stable jobs, are there significant regional differences where these jobs are located?
Mr. Edmund.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, you'll see the larger number of those jobs actually in the metropolitan area, more so than maybe greater Minnesota. But one of the things that I always said when you're looking not just at the jobs but also about the sales of the leisure and hospitality industry, while the dollars may not be as great overall in greater Minnesota as a percentage of the economy, they're in some ways even more important, even though the overall dollars aren't as big.
So. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Heinzman's comments, but this is maybe a different situation in my district. When you have the mining versus the tourism stuff being put forward, and what the difference is. So what I would like to ask you is, do you have a breakdown on what the average job would pay, benefits, and pay for in the tourism industry?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chair, I will get that. It is definitely less than say, a mining job in and of itself. But again, you have to think about, true, the previous question in terms of a lot of them are not full-time jobs as well. And they do provide people that employment that they need as that jump. And even young people, you know, their first job starting out is not going to be that higher level job. You see a lot of folks that are younger in the leisure and hospitality industry that get their feet wet and learn about customer service, they learn about business, et cetera, and that it becomes a springboard for them. And some of those then actually do grow on to management positions as well. But overall, the wage is definitely, I won't kid you, it is less in the leisure and hospitality industry.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you could get that breakdown for me, I'd appreciate it, because that's one of the arguments that we're faced with all the time. And don't get me wrong, I've got the North Shore, so I'm not against tourism jobs by any chance. But we need to fully make the comparable case on this, too. So, thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Edman, I have a couple. You were referencing the Super Bowl, and I think 2 years ago when you were here, we were leading up to the Super Bowl and some of these large events. And I know there's been kind of a post-evaluation on quantifying events on what the economic return is. And some of that, there's the private sector promotion and those type of things. You know, as we look forward, what are some of the large marquee events that your agency needs? If we're looking at some of those in the next 2 years, what do you see on the horizon where you may need some additional help?
Well, we have several a continuation of events. Minnesota has been very fortunate, Mr. Chairman, with obviously starting with the Ryder Cup and the All-Star Game and the Super Bowl, et cetera. We also have the Final Four coming up here in April. In 2020, the World Cup cross-country ski race will be held in Minneapolis. That is actually something that I'm particularly excited about because it is an event, unlike the Super Bowl, that promotes the product of Minnesota. That is us, and it's something that will be people all throughout the globe that will be coming here. And so that will be another big event. And in terms of assistance from the legislature, one of the things that, I'm not sure we'll need have time to get through this entire deck, but the legislature last year put $900,000 into an events grant program. That was used split pretty evenly between Greater Minnesota and the metro area. And there's a lot of big events that we were able to support with that, I mean, whether it's the X Games or, again, the World Cup. But there's a lot of smaller events as well that may not be as large, but things like an International Falls, a World Plowing Competition. Whoever thought there would be a plowing competition up in Roseau? But it's huge to that area and brings a lot of folks. So for us to continue to support bringing new events to the state of Minnesota that wouldn't have otherwise come here without some little assistance, that is one thing I'm sure that we could look at because it's not part of our base. It would be something that the legislature would have to consider.
I was thinking things like that might be the 100th anniversary of the first women voting after the suffrage amendment passed.
We've talked about it, yes, Mr. Chair. Another one.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edman, I apologize for missing the first half of your presentation. Can you speak on a little bit about, since you were talking about some of the hiring, around the hiring goals that is the organization meeting some of the hiring goals that the state have with regards to equity and hiring for women, communities of color, people with disability, veteran status, and in that, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, are you specifically referring to our agency,
yes.
Explore Minnesota? Yes, we do. We've been working with Deed's Office of Diversity in trying to achieve those goals. We're not, as a small agency, 46 individuals, FTEs, we don't have as many opportunities as maybe the larger agencies do as well, but that's something that we're always seeking to attract those kind of candidates. We've increased our numbers with one hire just recently, but that's a goal that's very clearly on our minds.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is the process, you know, with regards to some of the events that have happened, like the Super Bowl and now with the Final Four coming up? Is the agency working with the different public and private partners to adhere to some of these hiring goals too, or is that a different process? If you could talk about that.
Mr. Edman.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, as a state agency, we have the state goals. I mean, a lot of these events, I think, just help. One of the things that I'm trying to do is to make sure that Minnesota is viewed as a global destination, that we accept people of diversity, et cetera. Indirectly through tourism, when people see that, I mean, it doesn't just affect my agency, it affects other agencies in the private sector as well, that we're becoming a welcoming a state as well. And I think that's probably one way that I can make a greater impact than the one or two people that we'd be hiring as an agency every year. So we're focused on that both as an agency in terms of our internal hiring, but also probably even more importantly in how we project Minnesota to others that live here and to others that live even farther away.
Just one final comment. I think where I'm trying to get at is that when the state of Minnesota is hosting these big events for for us, you know, and for your agency, when you're partnering up with the different organizations that are coming into the Twin Cities or to the state of Minnesota, for you to encourage for these, you know, private organizations to look at some of our hiring goals that we have in place, and also, you know, look at how could we even temporarily partner up or employ some of our community members, because I know that, you know, with regards to the Super Bowl and with regards to the Final Fours being over at U.S. Bank Stadium, it's right next to my district, and I believe that, you know, the people in my community would want to be able to participate in whatever programming is coming in, whether that's, you know, through our state agency or through some of the private partnerships that we have, too. And so just so that you're aware, that's, you know, something that I'm concerned about, too, and would like to see the state of Minnesota do a better job of. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edmund, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm curious, this conversation spurred a thought in me for these special events like the Super Bowl and the Frozen Four, or excuse me, the Final Four. Frozen Four, I'm a hockey guy. It's the Rose Award hockey game tonight. So the people who get hired for those, are those predominantly part-time positions?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, they are hired by the local organizing committee, and they're usually on a part-time basis.
That's right. If we could maybe proceed a little bit, we're running a bit behind on yours, so if you could
proceed. Certainly, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for all those great questions. I'm just going to kind of skip through probably getting down to the end. You can read for yourself. One of the things I try to include in here is that when we're focusing on these various goals and we have the numeric goals, we are measuring how are we doing? Are we achieving our goals in terms of whether it's website traffic, the return on investment, the match report? This is the slide actually that's right in front of you right now, is the match report that shows our growth. We've far exceeded what we need to be achieving in terms of match. And the reason we do that is it just leverages the dollars that we get from the state to allow it to go farther. And not all of that is cash. A lot of that is in kind as well. But we received a record last year of the amount of money that we brought in from the private sector to match our program, because I think that's just a way to take what resources you're able to find in the state budget and make it even go farther with the private sector. And so I think last year was almost $14.2 million we brought in cash and in kind. The ROI, early on, I think there was a question earlier about what we achieved. We hired an independent company, Longwoods, to look at what incremental trips, spending, and taxes are from our advertising. And this is the number that maybe you're looking for. We achieved a 10-to-1 return on investment in 2018, which is the highest that we've ever seen. And then as we go into the next year, just sort of a highlight or just a top-level look at what we're going to be doing. We did an audit with the dollars that we received from the legislature for website and technology enhancements to find, can we be the best that we possibly can be? From that, we've done an RFP, and we've hired a new vendor to rebuild our website, which will happen throughout the course of this year. We also hired a new advertising agency this last summer after an RFP. We have an entirely new creative campaign, and we also have an entirely different media strategy, which is much more heavily digital than we've ever done before, and also much broad, almost global, if you will, because when someone is interested in mountain biking, as an example, I don't care if they're from Indiana, if they're from Wisconsin, or if they're from Colorado. We want people to come here and enjoy the product that we have in the communities that you represent throughout the state of Minnesota. So we're going to be much broad and much more focused in the marketing than we've ever done before. And then also the last thing, actually, the second to last thing that I'll mention is that we don't have all the answers. We don't know all the things that you know. And so we're going to be embarking on some listening sessions throughout this summer to find out how can we better do our job in marketing Minnesota. So we're going to be having sessions between now and in the summer in June to find out what does the industry think about what we're doing, how can we improve our services as well. We're going to do that on an annual basis. And I don't have a copy of it here, but you, this is actually a picture. I will get you a copy of a cereal box after this session and make sure you all have a copy, which tells you, for those members that are new, the economic impact of travel in every specific county in the state of Minnesota, the jobs, et cetera. So it's just a fun way to display that information. So that is an abbreviated version without the incredibly awesome video, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
We'll be looking forward to the cereal box. Next, we have the Science Museum.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Allison Rumpel Brown, and I'm President and CEO of the Science Museum of Minnesota. It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. I'm joined by John Severson. He's my Director of Strategic Partnerships, and it's my honor to lead a storied and beloved institution. It's one of the most visited indoor attractions and museum in our state. I hope you've all been there. And if you haven't, we would love to give you a tour. And in 2019, just this month, we celebrated our 112th year. And we look forward to another 112 years with you. So as you can see, right up here on this map, and you can read a little bit more clearly probably in your handout, we are a statewide asset, and we reach all corners of Minnesota, all 87 counties, to turn on the science, inspire learning, inform policy, and improve lives. Our vision, is a world in which all people have the power to use science to improve lives. We win national awards for excellent education programs and initiatives. We are a science technology center that specializes in interactive exhibits. We really emphasize from our beginning 112 years ago, learning along with our tradition, which we were founded as a natural history museum, with scientific research, which we do around the world, collections, and interpretive exhibits. We provide essential education support for teachers and students statewide, and we are a cultural asset. Last, we make science personal, meaningful, and fun with our commitment to science, education, and equity. We break down barriers so all Minnesotans can see themselves in science, particularly girls and youth of color and youth from low-income families, who for a variety of reasons don't see themselves as scientists, are going into STEM careers. For the past 5 years, we've served all 87 counties in Minnesota through a combination of field trips, school outreach programs, and teacher professional development. Last year, we reached 162,000 participants statewide. In 2019, we celebrated our 20th anniversary of partnership with Flint Hill Resources. They've been a key partner with the museum for 20 years. They've underwritten a really popular program called Science Matters. It's an outreach program which pairs schools that come. We go to them and do assembly programs, and they also have an opportunity to sleep with the dinosaurs at the museum here in St. Paul. Frequently, they will combine that with a visit to the beautifully restored state capitol. So that's a really inspirational trip for those students. It's a mix of metro schools and greater Minnesota schools as well. We hope to announce, we will announce, that this year we'll reach our 200th student through this program. And this provided at no cost to the participants, both for attending and for the transportation. And in 2018, the Science Museum of Minnesota declared it the Year of the Engineer. We had a goal of reaching 1 million participants, and we more than doubled that goal by reaching 2.3 million participants through our combination of camps, outreach programs, exhibits, films, and a partnership with TPT that featured Science Museum engineering programming across the state. Double-sided. Trick me. We are located, we have renamed our science house to be Ideal Center and focus on inclusion, diversity, equity, and access, and it's increased focused on STEM literacy to eliminate the disparities in math and science and help every student succeed in STEM. We serve classroom teachers, school administrators, and district leaders. We provided over 9,000 of contact hours with 26 Minnesota school districts, in 26 Minnesota school districts, four charter schools, and the Minnesota Department of Education. We provide teacher professional development, workshop, and institutes for teachers, leadership professional development. We're now taking that program and expanded it beyond the classroom for corporations and colleges. We also have our Science House Lending Library. It's like a toy store for teachers, full of materials that they can check out and use in the classrooms. We provide exhibit design and creation, like our great, great exhibit that is back here in our St. Paul home, Race, Are We So Different? Additionally, we had an exhibit here called Mental Health, Mind Matters. I hope you had an opportunity to see it. If not, it will actually be in Rochester, and you'll have a chance to see it at the Rochester Arts Center from May through September. Our goal with that exhibit was to break down the stigma about mental health and mental illness. According to the World Health Organization, nearly one in four people have a mental illness, which means almost everybody here in this room has a friend, a coworker, or a family member who has a mental illness. We want everybody to be able to talk about mental illness the way we talk about physical illness. It's a powerful exhibit. If you have a chance to see it in Rochester, please do. Once it's there, it will tour around the nation. Our race exhibit has toured around the nation as well, been seen by over 4 million people in 50 locations. We also have our work with NASA, which was a $4.5 million grant we received from NASA to take the NASA data, the NASA information, and make it fun and accessible. We'll have hundreds of small footprint exhibits that we will house in museums around the nation so we can share their expertise. Minnesota is home to a really vibrant and productive economy, and STEM is one of those keys to keep that economy going. Economists project that 20 to 30% increase in scientific and technical occupations in the next 10 years. And 90% of the fastest growing occupations will be in the STEM disciplines. We cannot waste one of those untapped brains of our youth because they are our future. We are working on workforce development and readiness. Study after study shows that if we don't reach and spark those youth when they're young, it's harder to get them into STEM fields. As Minnesota's leading provider of informal STEM education, the Science Museum addresses the urgent need to develop new, innovative ways to engage young people, particularly girls and youth from communities of color, in meaningful and formal experience as a pathway to the STEM workforce. We are asking your consideration for $1,079,000 annually for fiscal year 20 and 21. We are asking for continuation of our current level of appropriation. The funding will support ongoing operations and our strategic plan. General appropriation support represents 2.5% of our total operational revenue. while total state sources represent about 5% of our operating revenue. The 2.5% represented by general appropriation is extremely important. We count on these dollars to operate our facility and to provide a clean, welcoming, and safe place for our visitors to learn about STEM and science education in a fun, interactive, and stimulating environment. General appropriation dollars are unrestricted and provide much appreciated flexibility because other donors, such as corporations and foundations, increasingly preferred restricted gifts to targeted exhibits or programs. Therefore, these general appropriations unrestricted dollars are extremely valuable to our organizations, and thank you. We are proud to leverage these dollars in a smart, responsible way. We work hard to secure a spectrum of diversified revenue streams and earned income to support our bottom line, such as admissions are 14% of our revenues, exhibit sales, another 9%, membership, 8%, and other earned income, such as summer camps, if you haven't been, they're a lot of fun, and classes and computer education are 20%. A slight diversion off topic that I want to update you is that I want to update you on our building preservation project, which you might have heard about before. We are very grateful for the state's support and partnership in securing the Riverside home we have occupied for almost 20 years. We are on time and on budget. Are there any better words to hear for a project of $26 million? We are very pleased to report that things are going well with the project, and our unwelcome water intrusion issues will come to an end by the end of this calendar year. So thank you for your important support in this project. When I arrived to Minnesota nearly 3 years ago, I came to a museum that excelled in the areas of science and education. And yes, I knew that we would have weather like the one that's coming in the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. And after a year of careful listening and assessing the needs of this community, we added a third pillar to our pursuit of excellence, and that is equity. The museum's science and education programs are widely recognized and shared throughout this great state, and the learning experiences are seen as a critical asset in attracting more interest in STEM careers. All three goals of our strategic plan to transform the visitor place, to amplify our impact beyond our walls, and to activate stakeholders to advance our mission are seen through the lens of equity and inclusion and drive the constant improvement of this organization to be more valuable to our Minnesotans. About 10% of our attendance comes through our Great Six program, as we call it, which is a deeply discounted program. A suite of programs provide tickets as low as $3 for those on some form of public assistance. They can come show the proof of assistance just like a membership card, so there's no stigma associated with the benefit. Another 10% of our visitors come for free through a variety of other programs. We also have an education opportunity fund, which we provide ways for schools who are underrepresented to come along with transportation so they can come to the Science Museum of Minnesota and learn about science, technology, engineering, and math. So thank you. Thank you for your past support, for your consideration of continued support of general appropriation funding for the Science Museum. Last year, with your support, we reached over 815,000 people who had a fun and learned, shared an experience with their family, friends, co-workers. We provide unique learning experiences. We will use your funds carefully and wisely. We match them with private and corporate funding. As a science learning center, we measure everything, so we're always learning and improving what we do. We provide measurable results. We use research, data-driven decision-making in alignment with the Minnesota academic standards. We have an on-site team of evaluation and researchers, many of whom have their PhD. We work with evaluators at the University of Minnesota We employ case studies, quantitative and qualitative data, pre-post surveys, interviews, and reflective practice to achieve continuous quality improvement and learning. Your support will ensure that we will continue to serve residents in all 87 Minnesota counties with excellence in informal STEM education and resources, including into the very tippy-top little point, which requires our staff to take their van and go up into Canada and then drop back down into our great state, because that's what Minnesotans do. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm open for any questions you may have.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming and testifying.
Of course, thank you for having me here.
A couple of weeks ago, the University of Minnesota sent 9 of its best scientists to the House to talk about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Mark Seely led off, and he started by saying that Minnesota is experiencing the most profound changes of any place in this country. He said he couldn't overstate the case. Folks gave us some very specific examples about maples already invading our boreal forests, and if we don't do something fairly dramatic, they'll be gone mm-hmm. in the lifetime of my children. So what is the role the Science Museum is playing in reducing climate change gases?
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair and members. Oops, sorry.
Go ahead.
Thanks, sorry. So thank you for the question. It's an important question for us. First, so you know that we have a statement on climate change is one of the 3 statements that we have approved by the board, and it's a foundational part of the work that we do. We have scientists team of scientists at the St. Croix Watershed Research Station who are studying climate change and its impact around the world and its impact on the watershed issues. And then we frame our work, all of the science that we do actually can be framed around climate change. We had a senior team meeting this morning and actually had a discussion around that. One of the things that we can do is study the past and use that to predict what's happening in the future and use that information as a way to, you can actually use paleontology and as paleobotanists to help predict what's happening in the future. And so that's part of our mission is to do that. So with all of our scientists.
Representative Wagenius.
My question is a little more direct than that.
Uh-huh.
Have you all made a commitment to get all your electricity, say,
yes.
from renewable energy? And what's your date
sure.
for doing that?
Sure. We have, and actually I have a chart. I can leave it with you. It was what we've done. We've done a whole number of things. This one's actually not the most impactful chart. The best thing that we've done is what's called a heat exchange system. And I'm not an engineer, but I'll try to explain to you really quickly what we've done. What it has done I'll try to start really quickly. When you go around in the wintertime, you see all that steam coming out of the buildings. That's wasted energy. So that steam, we actually take that steam from our building and we take it back into the building and we use it to reheat our building. And that retrofit cost $900,000. But we save $300,000 a year in heat that we don't spend because we capture that heat, and that heat you have that heat in elevators, computer rooms. We're generating heat in this room right now that actually has to be expelled out of a building, even in a cold in days like this. We generate heat where we don't want it. So engineers have to expel it from room, but we capture that heat and we reuse it. So instead of spending $300,000 a year on heating, we're saving it a year. And I can get you the exact saving energy carbon footprint savings from that, just blocks and blocks and blocks that we're saving. We also have solar energy that we use. We have solar on our roof. We have we buy our energy from a solar farm. We put in fluorescent lights. We've changed a lot of our building to reduce our energy use dramatically. Does that answer your question?
No.
No.
Representative McGee.
So let me just, the very specific question is, we all know that one of the dates we've got to meet is 2030.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a huge date. So my question is, will you...
Oh, sorry. I'm off protocol.
Will all of your electricity come from renewable sources by that date?
Ms. Brown.
Sorry. By 2030, yes, we are working to bring all of our resources by renewable energy by that date, yes.
Representative McGinnis.
If I could, thank you for that. I hope you're telling your students that, because one of the issues we're running into are adults telling kids what they should do and not doing it themselves. So we're in the position where parents know better than this, but you're not supposed to tell a kid, do as I say, not as I do. So if you have that commitment, it is important that the kids not only see it, they know it, and they know the end date. So thank you.
Ms. Brown.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for testifying and for leading what I think is one of our real gems in the state of Minnesota. I'm curious if you attempt to follow how effective you are in attracting kids into the STEM professions. I know you track visits and that kind of thing, but do you have any way to look over time to see if you're bumping more kids into pursuing careers in the STEM professions?
Ms. Brown.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you. Good, excellent question. What we can track are the kids that are part of our Kidney Anderson Youth Science Center, which I did not talk about today. They are youth that we bring in starting in eighth grade, and then they apply to become part of a paid internship program, and we follow them through, and they all graduate high school, which is fantastic, and then they go on, not all of them go on into STEM careers, a super majority do. What they do find is that they all have an understanding about science and how they use science every day in their lives and a respect for it. But not all of them go into STEM careers.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Severson, did you have anything to add? You've been waiting patiently there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here to lend support to Allison, and I just want to say my very sincere thanks to the state for the partnership that we receive.
Great. Any questions? And you're open tomorrow?
Yes. Thank you for the good question, Mr. Chair. Yes, we are open tomorrow. Adults and kids.
We might have at least one more attendance tomorrow, I think.
Thank you.
So thank you, and we're you. Next to the Conservation Corp.
Good afternoon. My name's Mark Murphy. I'm from the Conservation Corps. I'm the executive director. Let me bring my deck up here. Make sure I got the right one.
Mr. Strohmeyer might coming up and provide some assistance.
Technology.
Is that what you're... We understand it's an awesome slideshow, just like tourism.
Hard to follow the video. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. It's on screen now. As I said, my name is Mark Murphy. I'm from the Conservation Corps, Minnesota. I'm the executive director, and I've been there for about 4 months. So I'm a newbie, if you will, and still in my onboarding process. I'm here today to give you a brief overview of who we are, the support we get from the state, and the important work that we do. And it's a pleasure to be here. Make sure all our technology is working here. And I hope to give you a somewhat of a high-level view. I think there may be some new committee members, so I'm touching a bit on history in order to ground everybody and where we're coming from, and then I'll talk about where we are and where we think we're going with some of our issues. I come to the Conservation Corps from actually outside the Conservation Corps. I spent 21 years in the corporate affairs area at Cargill and decided it was time to leave the corporate life and find something that I wanted to do that was mission-driven. And I was familiar with the Corps. I've long-term known of the Civilian Conservation Corps. And my background at Cargill in terms of working with in philanthropy with young people, I led our foundation, I led our corporate responsibility and sustainability efforts, worked with environmental partnerships, and it was a perfect fit to join the Conservation Corps. Conservation Corps, for those of you who don't know much about what we do, is we really provide hands-on opportunities to young people, youth and young adults, in terms of stewardship, environmental stewardship, natural resources management, working through the AmeriCorps program, in national community service. In more recent years, we've also taken on working for some disaster response in times of national and natural disasters. A bit of history is that we go back to the 30s. We've been around a long time. We go back to the civilian conservation, the WPA, those days when our nation had a real civic and national service spirit, and the organization existed in ways and means and became actually a program of the DNR in the 70s. And for many years, we existed within the Department of Natural Resources as a state program. And in the mid to late 90s, the AmeriCorps program was created, which is a national program started by the Clinton administration. And it motivated us with other factors going on at the state at the time to be spun off and become a standalone nonprofit. So since right around 2000, we've been a standalone nonprofit. We've maintained a very close relationship with the DNR, and we continue with that close relationship today. What do we do? Well, we improve access to outdoor recreation. I like to say we're rails and trails. If you spend time in parks around Minnesota, it could be St. Croix, it could be up in Gooseberry, it could be in Three Rivers Park right here in the metro area, and you run into young people and they've got yellow hats on and they're working out there doing hard labor all seasons of the year. We do a lot of that work, and we do it in partnership with multiple partners, state, federal, municipal partners. We do habitat restoration on lands. A lot of it is invasive species. We hear a lot about invasive species today. We heard the comments earlier about climate change. We see a lot of impacts of invasive species. So our people do a lot to go out on public lands, helping these various agencies that own public lands to remove those invasive species, plant new habitat. We also work on water quality. We clean what's called river water trails, right? So we spend a lot of time on the riverways in Minnesota, cleaning blocked areas, trees, things like that out so that people could continue to enjoy the waterways and shorelines across Minnesota. And then, as I mentioned, natural disaster response. Although we have contracts with many of our partners to work in state on many of these projects, We also, as an AmeriCorps agency funded federally, increasingly have been asked to come out and deploy on disaster. So we'll go out and work in South Carolina or North Carolina or Florida at the expense of FEMA, at the request of FEMA, because our crews are considered some of the best trained. They've been trained in safety. They've been trained and certified in handling some equipment, and they arrive on site disaster ready to take charge. So we've really been giving people a great opportunity who comes to us and works with us for a year, for 6 months, for 3 months, seasonal each year. So who is it? We have two sort of cohorts. We have our young adults, who is age 18 to 25. They tend to come for 11 to 9 month rotational periods, running from January, February to November, December. These numbers here, you see our last year's numbers. So we had 325 AmeriCorps placements with us. And then additional placements were our 11 individual placements, which are individual mentorships in many of the state agencies around who serve full-time, almost internships. We have summer apprenticeships that we place, many of which have been placed in the Soil and Water District offices. And then we have youth leaders who work with young people in the program that's just below it called our Youth Serve, which is our Youth Outdoors and our Summer Youth Corps program. This served 255 youth last year in spring, summer, and fall experiences working in the forest, working in natural resource management opportunities with our partners. Member demographics, it's always asked, and so what is it like? I mean, our biggest challenge, and I'll mention it a little bit later in one of my slides, is the changing demographics. I mean, about 50% of our core members are male, female, and we have are tracking the numbers now for the more non-binary LGBT identities. Well, race, we have, as you can see from there, we have significantly large Caucasian, but are reaching more into the Hmong. We've worked with the Native American population here in Minnesota for several years on special programs up north. We have our programs in Minneapolis and St. Paul with youth in inner city park district offices and so forth. In terms of results, these are just some very high-level numbers, but they give you a sense of the kinds of stuff that we do. So you can see some numbers here. In 2018, we're still finalizing our numbers and our reports as we bring them in. But around 600, 650 young people are served by us each year. In terms of training and education hours, these are the kinds of training that we do around the equipment that they handle, the training that we give them around thinking about careers in these fields, the training around safety and first aid. So total hours in terms of training is around 60,000 a year. Acres of habitat that we're restoring, you can see, is around 48,000 in 2016. You can see last year it was 32,000. Miles of trails restored, over 1,500, and that includes both water miles and non-motorized vehicles. We have crews that are working, and I believe the number is 97% of the house districts around the state. We've planted last year somewhere along the lines of about 85 or 90,000 trees. We also track information on the young people who come through and survey them in terms of what they learned, and they feel that here it says they gained workforce readiness skills. So in the high 90s, or 90%, I should say, around how they feel they learned a lot while they were in the program, and the same would be said for them appreciating the great outdoors, as we would say, and learning about environmental stewardship. In terms of budget and financial, we've been getting around $950,000 a year, call it about $1 million through the Legacy Fund. About half of that goes to The general unrestricted kind of support that was mentioned in the previous presentation. The other half, it goes to dedicated funds aimed at the kinds of trails that are part of the DNR's dedicated fund program, and so it directly supports program costs related to the crews that are working on projects related to the dedicated funds. But overall, you can see our budget has been, for the last 4 years, about $9.5 million. It'll be pushing around $10 million this coming year. So we project we get about 12 or 13% in terms of federal grants through the AmeriCorps program, which basically pays for the support. This supports the stipend that brings these volunteers on for the year. The federal government, our budget, doesn't touch our budget, but they support all these AmeriCorps workers with a scholarship at the end of their service. We also get then count the legacy funds that we've been getting for the last 10 years, about 11 or 12% of our budget. When you see on there fee-for-service, almost 70% of our budget comes from fee-for-service because we bring these workers on. Then we go and we contact with state agencies like DNR, like Bowser, like the federal agencies like the Park Service or Fish and Wildlife, like St. Paul Public Parks or Minneapolis Public Parks, these kinds of Three Rivers, these kinds of groups, nonprofits, to basically contract us where we then bring the crews in, deploy our crews on their projects, and they then pay for our cost to do that work. So indirectly, we are also receiving money from the state and from the federal government because they are funding us through programs that they're getting their own funding from. From an expense side, it's really we have about 37 staff statewide scattered in offices around. We also have a small staff in Iowa. We have offices in the region around the state, northwest, northeast, central, and south. Our expenses have stayed relatively flat over the last few years. We watch very closely the program costs of running these young people through, all the equipment that comes with them, all the training costs that come with them, and then we have the direct program costs related to transportation and equipment and so forth. In terms of opportunities and challenges, I mean, we really have great bones in that we have amazing longstanding relationship with these partners that I've mentioned before. We have over 350 project hosts, so ongoing relationships with hosts that have been surveyed and say that 99% of them work with us again. So we really have no problem about demand. We have a huge demand for our services, and if there's a challenge we have is meeting that demand, having enough people to come work for us to meet the demand of the amount of work that our partners are asking us to do for them. The recruiting is an increasing challenge. The job market today is quite robust. Minimum wage issues around, we talk about minimum wage issues, are pushing up against what we can pay people. The federal shutdown is an example. The uncertainty around that, certainly this year has made uncertainty around anything associated with federal jobs make it a bit harder to attract people. The changing demographics and working in the outdoors is also a hurdle we have to work over. And just the cultural changes, the style changes we're seeing, even in Minnesota, you've read about recently, about how maybe people are spending less time in the outdoors, conservationists in general, hunting, fishing, those kinds of things are in the decline. The changing demographics and trying to introduce people to the wonders that Minnesota has to offer are all barriers or hurdles that we have to get over. So these are the things that we're looking at. How do we change the faces, change the demographics, attract where these young people to come do this kind of opportunity in the future is where, as I come on board 4 months into my job, I see our growing challenge to really lean into. With that, I'll thank you. I'll see on the slide. You can see my email address if you have any questions, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have. And I thank you for the ongoing support the state has had through the Legacy Fund, the other indirect ways we benefit from the programs that the state has to offer, and keep it coming, please.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. I really appreciate the investment that you have into your program participant and keeping that consistent. And one question that I have to you is that it seems like over the last 3 years, the hours of education and training provided to the young people have, however, decreased. Can you share with us why that is the case?
How our investment in training has decreased?
No, so just more of the performance measures.
Yeah, those performance measures. Probably the biggest
Mr. Murphy.
Thank you for the question. And I think there's two factors. And again, this is me coming from my assessment after 4 months. One is in the last year and a half, we have implemented entirely new systems. I mean, this organization is a nonprofit. It came out of the state. It ran boldly and had tremendous growth between, say, 2005 and 2011 from like 100 students served to 500 served. So last year, before my arrival, the board made a decision to invest heavily in new systems around financial and tracking systems. So in some ways, I would say our data is getting better. So you may see an improvement in data or a decline in numbers because our data is actually getting more accurate in Maricopa County less. That's one just side administrative factor. The other factor is you can see the numbers of people we served last year is down a touch. And I think it's partly that recruiting issue. Partly there were some other issues related to our slots that we have funded from the federal government. But with fewer people, you have fewer results. The investment in training, if anything, the investment in training, the investment in career preparation is actually up. We had a grant from DEED to help us do some more career planning around it. We're talking to the AmeriCorps program about some certifications and apprenticeship type things we can do. So I'd say if anything, you're seeing a dip there. It's more around us making adjustments for accuracy and to address where we need to take these young people further. The kinds of people we get has a broad range. We can have a young person coming right out of high school that doesn't know what they want to do, but they like the outdoors, and it sort of sounds interesting for a year. We may also have somebody in our program on the other spectrum that's 4 years out of a four-year institution. They've gone for an environmental sciences or biology degree, and they want to get real hands-on experience in the DNR or something so they're better suited for that career in the field. So we're working with a wide range of people, and what I see is we have to do a better job to help all of those people point north to an advantage. And there is a segment that probably has to point more north into two-year institutions and the kinds of opportunities that are really good for them to use as a springboard to a longer career. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's the things that I've seen needed or working towards in just the first 4 months of assessment.
Any other questions? Mr. Murphy, I have one. You know, you mentioned 13% coming from the federal government and the uncertainty related to the shutdown. And I'm unclear, there's like a Corporation for National Community Service that's out there that has, I think it was the VISTA programs or AmeriCorps programs or programs that you work with. And I don't know if that's budget is continuing or if it's, if, and I think there's a proposal to move the state-by-state liaisons to a district or a regional. Could you just maybe highlight a little bit of what that is?
Yeah, excellent question and very timely. Just first of all, 30%, and that you are correct. We work with the Corporation for National Service, closely connected. The funding for that program passed this year in September, came through the appropriation process. Safe and sound for us, that was good news. Longer term, the corporation is going through, has gone through a big leadership change and is going through administrative improvement and transformation process, we were told. And part of that process is the announcement that they're moving to a regional structure for managing the program from a state-by-state structure. So we work with MNSERV as our commission here that represents the National Commission. And so there's a proposal that through that regional structure, they will eliminate the office. I was over at Congresswoman McCollum's office yesterday hearing exactly about this, and they have a meeting on the topic this Friday at Hamlin to hear from the stakeholders about the concerns we have about closing that state office. Minnesota has a big AmeriCorps contingent. About 3,000 slots, I think, are in Minnesota. We are about, you know, 300 or 400 of them. We're one of the big players. So we're watching it very closely. According to McCollum's office yesterday, the administration, the Trump administration, is interested in eliminating AmeriCorps, but it's a very popular program in Congress, both sides of the aisle, and so the jury is still out.
And maybe a follow-up on that. So if you had moving to regional offices, then you would have to go, what does that mean?
Our understanding from our contact is it moves towards, we have a regional administrator that we work with. So from an administrative standpoint, we'd have a different person. Question is it a middle person, above or below a Minnesota contact as well, and just added bureaucracy? We don't know the determination. We have heard both. So this Friday's meeting may be very interesting to hear the clarity on that.
It seems like you have a friend that wants to testify on this point. Is it it? On
oh, yeah. Hi, how are you?
Mr. Chairman, Josh Downham. I'm with the state's Commission on National Community Service, which is Serve Minnesota. And so there are essentially two entities overseeing AmeriCorps programs here in Minnesota. One is the State Commission, Serve Minnesota, and then there's the office, which is it's actually federal employees based here in Minnesota, and they oversee Senior Corps and VISTA members. That is the one that's being proposed to be eliminated here locally and moved to Kansas City. But it would not affect the state's commission, which is actually part of our state statutes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Oh, Representative Becker Finn has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for asking that issue and kind of answering some of those questions, because I think there are more AmeriCorps members and alums out there, myself, one of them, Representative Cagle as well, and I think, the benefits that they provide to our community that folks maybe are not aware of, it's really a phenomenal program where we're getting a lot as communities for not a lot of money. The AmeriCorps members get paid very little. It really is a year of service and very service oriented. And I know that we benefit in the public schools in my area, in the senior programs in our area, as well as the things that we're doing on the Conservation Corps end. So glad to hear the update and that Congresswoman McCollum is hopefully standing up for that program as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker Finn. Minnesota gets the second most federal AmeriCorps funding of any state in the nation, second only to California. And that's because the quality of our AmeriCorps programs and that we really do put a focus on outcomes for our communities. So appreciate your service, and I'll be talking to you about a bill I have in my bag.
I'm so new at this that yesterday, I know Josh from another lifeline, might say, on the other side of the river, and we saw each other yesterday in the Senate building, and he said, oh, what are you hearing? He said, oh, I'm here at AmeriCorps, and I just learned yesterday that he's the lobbyist for that side. So he and I are going to be talking a lot more.
Thank you. Well, and we have one more, the LCCMR presentation. So thank you
very much.
Good afternoon, members.
Welcome.
Let me just try to pull my presentation up here.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. I am Becca Nash. I am the director of the LCCMR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to provide an overview of the LCCMR and the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. I should acknowledge some of the current and former LCCMR members who are on your committee today, Representative Eklund, Representative Wagenius, Representative Babian and Representative Heinzman, so I see are no longer here, but we appreciate their service. The LCCMR is a 17-member body made up of 5 representatives, 5 senators, and 7 citizens, 5 of which are appointed by the governor, and 1 each by the House and the Senate. Together, they are charged, among other things, with making recommendations to the legislature on how funds from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund are spent. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is Minnesota's first constitutionally dedicated funding source for the environment and natural resources. It was established with through a voter amendment in 1988 and passed with 77% approval. It was voted on 2 subsequent times, in each instance garnering similarly high levels of public support. Per the Constitution, the trust fund receives 40% of the annual proceeds from the Minnesota State Lottery. It also receives investment income generated through investments that are managed by the State Board of Investment. It's treated like a permanent endowment, so 5.5% of the value of the fund each year can be used towards environmental projects that fall within the constitutional purpose of the fund, as well as state statute and the LCCMR strategic plan. The Constitution says this, that the assets of the fund shall be appropriated by law for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. It also provides that loans may be made of up to 5% of the principal of the fund for water system improvements as provided by law. As I mentioned, we have state statute that governs the use of the fund, and specifically the 116P08 lays out the intent of the fund by describing both how money can and cannot be spent. So money in the trust fund may be spent only for the Reinvestment in Minnesota program, for research that contributes to increasing the effectiveness of managing the state's resources, for collection and analysis of information that assists developing the state's environmental policies, for enhancement of public education awareness and understanding necessary for the protection of our resources, for capital projects for the preservation and protection of unique natural resources, activities that preserve or enhance our resources that may otherwise be substantially impaired or destroyed throughout the state, and then administrative and investment expenses. In laws of 2018, another allowance was added, and that was to pay principal and interest on special appropriation trust fund bonds issued according to law. The exceptions that are set out in statute are that for purposes of environmental compensation and liability, for purposes of municipal water pollution control, for costs associated with decommissioning of nuclear power plants, for hazardous and solid waste disposal facilities, or for projects or purposes inconsistent with the strategic plan. I will note that in the laws of 2018, that bullet number 2, the prohibition, so to speak, was narrowed so that that only applies for municipalities with a population of 5,000 or more. The statute also specifies that the trust fund must be used to supplement and not supplant traditional sources of funding for the environment and natural resources. So how do projects get recommended for funding from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund? They are selected through a multi-step competitive process that usually begins with the LCCMR issuing its annual request for proposals. That request lays out the priorities for funding that cycle, and it's open to anyone who wants to apply. So that can be local, state, or federal units of government. It could be schools, tribes, nonprofit organizations, et cetera. LCCMR members then review the proposals. They hear presentations. They're able to ask questions of the proposers, and then they vote on the projects. And successfully recommended projects need to receive at least a supermajority vote from the members, so that's 12 of the 17. Research projects, I should say, go through an additional review process, and that's an external scientific review that's coordinated by LCCMR staff. And then those top proposals get wrapped up into a bill and presented to the legislature, and that's where you take it. The bill must make its way through the legislature and then be signed into law by the governor. Projects are evaluated by the following evaluation criteria, the evaluation criteria shown here, and these again are laid out in our strategic plan. They include how closely they projects respond to our funding priorities, the environmental benefits they propose, the urgency of the issue, the ability to leverage partners or additional funds. So I should say that the 2019 process of conducting these evaluations has just concluded, and we will be presumably presenting that bill before this committee at some point. In the meantime, our next funding cycle, so our 2020 cycle, has opened, and we're currently accepting proposals for recommendations that may come before you in the next legislative session. So our funding priorities are outlined here. And I'll just put a special emphasis on the last one on this list, which is called small projects. And this is the second year in a row that we're trying this. And this was LCCMAR's interest in getting the word out to all organizations, regardless of their size, to let them know this funding source is available to them as well. So the idea is to get this out to local units of government, to nonprofits, groups that may be able to efficiently produce benefits for Minnesota's environment and natural resources. I have copies of the RFP here if you'd like them. We have approximately $53 million available. These are for funds beginning July 1st, 2020. The deadline for submitting is April 15th. If people want to submit a draft for LCCMAR staff to review, they can do so anytime from now up until March 15th. So I just want to leave you with a couple examples of projects that we have funded in the past. Some of our flagship projects have included the County Geologic Atlas, which creates foundational information needed to guide water supply planning and protect drinking water. The Minnesota Biological Survey has documented the unique natural features across the state and has been used in countless ways to target conservation. We've made significant investments in protecting our lands and waters from invasive species. We were instrumental in establishing both the terrestrial and the aquatic invasive species research centers at the University of Minnesota. Our funds are currently being used to radio collar and track deer in southeast Minnesota to better manage the spread of chronic wasting disease there. Our funds have both helped identify water contaminants, being estrogen, microplastics, harmful algal blooms, chlorides, other contaminants of emerging concern. And then importantly, also developing tools and technologies to better treat those contaminants. We've been on the leading edge of state funding towards efforts to understand and stem the decline of pollinators. We also funded work by the zoo to reintroduce the imperiled butterflies to protected areas that can sustain them. And then a recent fund project was helping to reintroduce bison to Minneopa and Blue Mountain State Park down in southwest Minnesota. Since 1991, the Trust Fund has provided over $550 million to support projects benefiting every county in the state. The Trust Fund is a source of funding for projects that meet on-the-ground conservation goals, but it's also a source of information for you as legislators as you do your work and make decisions that affect our natural resources across the state. We're here to help. I failed to introduce the other staff in the office. I have Michael Varian here and Megan Lennon, who just started with us in November. Diana Griffith is back in the office. We are located just in the corner in State Office Building, Room 65. We're here to help, and thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Ms. Nash. You're ahead of adjournment by about 25 seconds, so that was good timing. I know folks may have some questions. We will be having House File 80 in front of this committee next Tuesday. So if folks think of some questions on LCCMR, that might be a good time to ask those. With that, I'll use the chair's prerogative. Has the LCCMR ever done assessments on plastic consumption by fish or wildlife or water quality. Just looking at consumption of microplastics or plastics.
Mr. Chair, members, I know that there's one project that will be coming before you this year that does just that, assessing the amount of plastics in Minnesota's lakes and waters, as well as the extent to which it's ingested by fish.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.